Hello, good evening, welcome, and happy new year to all of our listeners from everybody here at No Name Ever. We are here for our first podcast of 2018, How Time Flies. And once again, we are back with a bang, with a bumper edition, because for the third time in recent times, Burnley have played two Premier League fixtures in 1 week, and we have lots to talk about. First up is the away travel across the Pennines to Huddersfield before the Clarets entertained Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool side at Turf Moor. Joining me this week, as ever, is our reliable panellist, James Bird. James, good evening.
Good evening, Natalie.
Good evening, good evening. So let's not waste any time. Let's jump right in there and let's get on with this week's show, where we start at Huddersfield away, where Burnley went across the Pennines to draw 0-0 with newly promoted side Huddersfield. James, particularly the first half, this was exactly what we wanted it to be. It was a very dominant performance by the Clarets. There's not an awful lot to talk about from this game, to be honest, so I think we'll probably be able to keep this relatively brief. The only thing, I guess, I want to bring up straight away, and let's just dive straight in there. Given the dominant first half performance, were we guilty, really, of not being ruthless enough in front of goal and not putting this game to bed before half-time?
I say it's one that, you know, you're going to look at and think we missed opportunities to win. I think if we'd been in a little bit of a different position points-wise so far, you know, looking at where we are now, things were different, we could have been looking at that game at the end of the season. Maybe if we went down as, you know, 2 points that we lost out on from not taking our chances. But obviously, as it is, I think we could probably not win again this season and be pretty comfortable with survival.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how your perspective changes depending on where your league position is at any one time. I think it certainly would have been a very stressful performance if we'd have had to go there desperately needing some points if we were in trouble in the league. But that's one of the wonderful things about being a Claret these days, is that we don't actually have these things to worry about. We have to basically stress about whether we're going to finish in the top six, not whether we're going to finish in the bottom six. But, you know, that said, it's quite unlike this Burnley side to be, I guess, ill-disciplined. I don't know if that's necessarily the right word I want to look at for this game, but it's just more of a maybe a lacking in desire in the Huddersfield game. And I do worry whether Burnley are going to get a little bit complacent with the, you know, more the games go on and more they cement their place in this league. Because let's be honest, we're not going to go down now, which is absolutely fantastic. But we did see it a little bit at the end of last season, where as soon as survival was secured, Burnley didn't win again for the rest of the season. So I'm feeling pretty confident that Dyche won't let that happen to this side, but I guess you can forgive them for easing up a little bit and maybe not having the same level of urgency and desire and I guess maybe desperation to games that perhaps are there when you're in a relegation fight. I think Dyche was pretty clear at the end of the game, James. He did state that Burnley created plenty of chances and he was really, really pleased with that. I'm not entirely convinced that all of them were very clear-cut chances. I think some of them were maybe made a little bit more spectacular than they were by some very good skill from the players at the end of the ball. But again, I felt like we were missing a little bit of a cutting edge up front. Do you think that we look a completely different side when we don't have Wood in that side? Or do you think that the cover we have up front is enough? I don't know. I feel like we lose a little bit of I don't know, bite up front when Wood's injured.
I think it's probably fair to say that Wood's a bigger goal threat than Ashley Barnes is. And when he's on the pitch, you feel like we're more likely to score. But we've seen Sam Vokes, obviously, he's done well previously up front alone. You know, first game of the season, for example, against Chelsea. You can't really complain about performances like that. So I think there is the quality there, even with Wood out, to still score goals. But I think a lot of it comes down to the service and maybe the other supporting cast. We see one man in the box, it's not a lot to aim at. So, you know, you can be getting crosses in, and if the defenders are alert to the danger, then it can be difficult to pick out that one man. So I think we need more really from Hendrick in his position. He should be getting up there and supporting the striker and giving a few more options, I think. And that's really where we've been falling short, is giving people options on who to pass to get into scoring positions. But I think that's been something all season. We've not scored enough goals. But the way we've defended has meant that when we score, we make it count.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't need to score 3 or 4 goals in a game, do we? Because most of the time, just a single goal is enough to see us get the points that we need. An interesting little nugget to come out of the game, I guess, was the introduction of Naki Wells late on, who almost got the 3 points for us with that half chance right at the end. What do you see him offering now, James? Because he's clearly fit and he's clearly absolutely raring to go. We did see him again in the Liverpool game. But what do you think he's going to offer to this side? Because I've got to admit, at the moment, I'm not entirely sure where he fits in the dynamic of the side. But I'm really interested to see what plans Dyche has for him. Can you see where he fits? Do you know what he's going to bring?
I think he brings a number of options. As we saw, he came on New Year's Day against Liverpool as well. He adds a bit of pace. I think late in games that can be, you know, an interesting addition to the mix. You know, someone who can stretch the defence a little. But as well for me, and I think I've said it maybe in the last two or three podcasts now. You know, with the way Hendrick's form's been, I'd be looking at maybe bringing Arfield into the middle and starting Wells out wide. You know, he gives you a little bit of an option there that he can use his pace, he can cut inside, and he can maybe take opportunities to score goals. He can maybe provide for others to score as well. And it allows you to play Arfield in that number 10 role, which I think when he's played there early in the season, he's looked pretty decent. I think better than he's looked when he plays out wide. And it gives you that opportunity to give Hendrick a little break that I think he might need, because he's just not quite been, the player we need in that position, you know, sort of giving us above average performance. I think he's been quite quiet, and while he's not been awful, he's not really made mistakes, he's not really been noticeable. And Wells could help us out there and, you know, play wide and give us another option in the middle with Arfield.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good summary of where, I guess, our best chances to play him. That said, who out of the strikers that we've got, out of Wood, Barnes and Vokes, who do you think he'd be most successful playing off, do you think? I kind of feel like I'd like to see him with Vokes, to be honest. I don't know why. I feel like Naki Wells is going to be more of a Danny Ings style player, and the Ings and Vokes partnership was by far our most successful one in recent times. And I don't know, I can see that kind of play really helping Vokes and him being able to take down chances and just lay it on for him. But what do you think? Who would you prefer to see him up front with?
I think he'd be possibly best with Vokes. I think, you know, Vokes' ability of flicking on would be giving Wells something good to run on to. But at the same time, you know, he make a decent point. Barnes is great at controlling the ball. I think he can hold it up. And, you know, if Wells is running on, it gives him the option to lay it off for someone. So I think, you know, either of those two, for me, could really help Wells play well coming in off the side, or he could actually even play maybe in the 10 himself, just use him to run on to balls from the striker.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually. It's a really fascinating one. I think, I'm not entirely, like I say, we weren't really that sure what plans Dyche had for him when he first signed him, but now he's starting to make some late substitute appearances. I'm genuinely intrigued to see where he goes with this. Obviously, the one talking point from the game on Saturday was, once again, another week, another game, another shocking penalty decision. Oh my God, James, I am going insane with the penalty problems in this league this season. What is going on? It's not even every single week. It feels like it's every single game at the moment. Over the festive period, there were four games and four controversial penalty decisions, two of which that were given that were blatantly not penalties, and two that weren't given, which were. I mean, and it's quite nice to see, actually, that Arsenal succumbed to one that wasn't a penalty, but, you know, all of our listeners' sympathy levels will be quite low. But we saw it at United as well. You know, they had a blatant handball not given for them. But for us, the biggest one of the weekend, and I can't believe not more is being made of this, was the tackle by the Huddersfield keeper on Jeff Hendrick. Oh my God, James, just talk me through it. Just talk us through it.
I'm not really sure there's much to talk through. It's, you know, a clear penalty. From what I've heard, it sounds like the referee said to Hendrick that he thought he'd lost his footing rather than was brought down, which is just astounding. You know, he's clearly brought down, and if you look at it, he's already almost taken that next touch with his left foot, and it's going to be a tough angle, but I'd back him to score with the next touch. And, you know, he's brought it down. I don't think there's any, you know, malicious intent from the keeper. It's just one of those missed time challenges you see keepers make. But normally, I mean, you know, we talk about penalties that you've seen given previously. I mean, you see those given 99 times out of 100. So it's really disappointing that the referees missed it. And it's probably cost us, you know, the game. I think if we score there, it's a different game and we'd probably go on and comfortably win.
Oh, yeah, we absolutely do. I mean, how many times have we seen it when Burnley take the lead and they completely shut up shop and, they defend so well? And that's where most of our 3 points have come from this season, from us being able to get our necks in front to start off with. I find this decision by the referee just bizarre in the fact that he clearly saw it and thinks that Hendrick just lost his footing. So yeah, there's a really good reason for that ref. Like, the keeper took his footing away from him, and it's like you said, James, Hendrick's got absolutely no reason to go down there because he's through on goal. It's literally a tap in. There is nobody there to stop the ball. He doesn't have to go past another defender. The line is right in front of him and he just needs to tap the ball over the line. So he's just got no reason to go down. And it's just unbelievable. It really is. And listeners, you'll share my pain, I'm sure you do, but it just feels like week in, week out, all we're talking about on this podcast is wrong penalty decisions. And, you know, Dyche says to us a lot that he believes that these things will even themselves out throughout the course of the season, but it just hasn't for us yet. We've been on the back end of some really soft penalties where we have it completely schooled to us by pundits and commentators and the likes after a game that you know, a minimal amount of contact is a nailed-on penalty. Well, how can Jeff Hendrick's, you know, foul on him not be a penalty? It just drives me insane. So for me, I genuinely feel like whilst we did have a very dominant first half display, we definitely were robbed out of those 3 points there. And it would have been a really valuable return because it would have put us on 4 points instead of two for the festive period, which given the four fixtures that we had would have been a pretty decent return. So I'm frustrated and I just feel like I've had enough. I just feel like at the moment, that referees don't actually know what's a penalty and what's not a penalty anymore. And it just feels like we're just making it up week in, week out. So that's my soapbox again, listeners. And I think regular listeners will probably just want to fast forward that bit because you've heard it every single week for the past 6 or 7 weeks, me going on a rant about referees and penalties and just the shocking decisions that are being made. But let's move on. I'm not going to dwell on the Huddersfield game, listeners, just because it was a 0-0 draw. It wasn't a particularly eventful game, I don't think. I think we played very well in the first half. I don't think we've created the same magic in the second half, but the guys did all right and it was still another clean sheet at a side away from home. So let's park that one as a very good away point and let's move on to yesterday's fixture, which was Liverpool at home. Now, this was a really tough one to take. It wasn't, again, the best of games for very different reasons, but the Clarets faced a Liverpool side that were without some key players. It was a very different side to the one that we usually see from Jurgen Klopp, and actually it was a very subdued side. Once again, it wasn't a classic. I don't think either side played particularly exciting, fluid, attacking football. And I think for me, James, that surprised me more than anything, in that we faced a Liverpool side that came to Turf Moor with unbelievably negative tactics. They didn't surge forward. They didn't create anything. They did a Burnley on us. They did to us what we do on every single side who comes to Turf Moor. Now, that's surely a massive compliment to Burnley, isn't it? That sides like Liverpool have to come to Turf Moor and play that style of football and just essentially just try and play for a draw.
Yeah, I think I was really disappointed with the way Liverpool played, actually. You know, there's some good players in the team, even with, you know, the guys they had out. And, you know, once they went 1-0 up, the time-wasting tactics that were there on display is certainly the worst I've seen a big side, you know, come to the turf and do. You know, to be time-wasting for, you know, pretty much the whole second half, to me, was a bit of a surprise. And obviously it nearly cost them when we got the equaliser. But in the end, the thing is, in the last minute of added time, that's all due to their time wasting, they've managed to win the game. So in the end, it's still managed to work in their favour, which I think is just makes it even more of a gut punch for us that we, you know, lost the game so late on. I think it is a compliment that, you know, a big side like Liverpool have come to the turf and have gone 1-0 up and look comfortable to just hold on to 1-0 and not look for more goals. I think that says a lot about how we play and how teams find it maybe difficult to break us down, that they're accepting that maybe the best they can get on the day is 1-0 and it's best to try and limit us and keep it as it is. That's the one positive to look at it from the way they decide to play, is that it is showing us an incredible amount of respect and you know, shows that they're certainly taking seriously the results we've gotten this season.
Yeah, it is. I guess what worries me a little bit about this tactic is that we are probably going to see most teams play like that against us for the rest of the season now, because our early season form has been not found out, because I don't think it's particularly groundbreaking, but I think now teams have seen enough of us now this first half of the season to understand Dyche's blueprint this season for how to win games and of trying to find ways to counterbalance that. What worries me, I think, and I've said this on previous podcasts before, is I feel like we have two contrasting sides with this current Burnley side. We have the very disciplined, very focused, very meticulous defensive side that has seen us get all the points from the season we have so far and is quite rightly winning all the praises of all the fans and all the pundits, and limits teams to chances and then basically tries to get one or two goals on the attack. And that side is just incredible, and it's just a joy to watch. However, I'm not entirely convinced yet that we have as strong a tactical game in the situations where Burnley go behind first. And I think we saw it again on Saturday. I think up until the point that Liverpool scored, we saw both sides just playing the same game of football and were essentially just cancelling each other out. And it actually had 0-0 written all over it, did that game. And it was quite kind of dull to watch, to be honest. But the minute that Liverpool scored, you saw a shift in the balance of the team, and they just don't look to me as disciplined and as organised as they are when they're either level or ahead. James, do you think that's been a little unfair, or can you see that when you watch these performances? Because I've seen it a few times now. And actually, even when we went level, we didn't really get back that discipline that we had at 0-0 when it was 1-1. It just feels like we go a little bit all over the place. Spurs especially was very obvious.
I think it's a difficult one to judge on the Liverpool game. You know, it was really tough conditions again. We said this against Stoke, but the weather was awful. And I think as soon as we equalised, Liverpool wanted to go on and get a winner. They still wanted to win the game. And I think the game just opened up a little bit. So when that happens, it's hard to say that maybe we've lost our structure. I think it's just the way the game went. You know, you can argue that we should be trying to get the game back under control in our favour, but it's a difficult one. And ultimately, I think both teams wanted to try and win the game, and as a result, the game's got a little bit more open. And then, you know, I think the goal is a really disappointing one. It doesn't come from open play, so I think the way we're playing in general doesn't really come into it. I think Bardsley's beaten by his man at the back post. He's just not as quick to follow the ball in, and ultimately he's beaten to the ball. And that doesn't normally happen for Burnley. It's not normal for us to lose those sort of battles late in the game. So I think from that point of view, it's very disappointing. I don't know whether it's maybe a little bit of mental fatigue, getting late in a game where the conditions are tough and, you're in the 94th minute and, you're just not quite alert to the danger the same as you are early on. But I'm not sure that the mentality changed maybe the same as it did against Spurs. I thought against Spurs, we just weren't at the races at all. Just wasn't our day. We didn't look like we had an answer to Harry Kane. Whereas I think for, the most of the Liverpool game, including later on, defensively we looked sound. We looked like we're, as impenetrable as we always do. It's taken a wonder strike from Sané for the first goal. That's a sensational turn and shot, and there's not much anyone can do about it. And the only thing you could maybe say is, we're unlucky that Ben Mee wasn't quite in the position to block it, but it's not something you can fault Ben Mee for. I don't think anyone can expect him to turn and hit it like that and position themselves in a way to block it. But obviously, the free kick at the end, it's a little bit disappointing. I don't know if it's just down to a little bit of mental fatigue or maybe a little bit of what we saw a lot last season creeping in, where we just seem to take our foot off the gas at the end of halves.
Yeah, we've seen it a few times, haven't we, this season, where injury time, both in the first half and at the end of the game, we've been stung, haven't we? Let's stick on the defence then, James, because you've raised a few points there that I wanted to talk about anyway. So let's expand on those, because I want to concentrate on the defence for a little while, predominantly because I think for both of the Liverpool goals, we were uncharacteristically quite poor in defence. I'm not entirely sure I share your perhaps praise of the first goal. I think the defence could have done a little bit better. I think leaving him so much space across that box to find the room and the time to place it as well as he did does need to be looked at. But yeah, you're right, it was a fantastic strike. But looking at this defence that we've got at the moment, James, so Bosley's continues to keep his place and continues to keep Matt Lowton out of the side. Taylor's playing well enough in cover for Ward, but we'll come on to that in a minute. And actually, despite a bit of a shocker against Spurs, I thought Long had some really good performances against both Huddersfield and United. Now, taking that makeshift back 4-5 and the fluidity that we've got in the defence at the moment, Matt Lowton, to me, I'm going to start with him, is a real quandary. I don't understand why he's been left out of the side. I thought he was absolutely fantastic, and I'm not entirely sure that Bosley is offering enough going forward. I feel that Matt Lawton's maybe more confident going forward and plays better one-touch football with both Goodmunson and Defoe. Where do you sit on the Bosley-Lawton quandary, James?
I don't think it'd be a surprise to anyone to know that I'm a big Lawton fan. I think anyone who's listened to the podcast in the past knows that I like him quite a lot. I like the way he plays. For me, I was surprised to not see him come straight back in when he returned from injury. Bosley had played well, but it's tended to be the case where I think where we've got a player who's clearly a better option, he does tend to get back in when it was an injury related reason he went out of the side. But Bosley continues to play well from there. I think, he deserves to keep his spot. But for me, I think after potentially being slightly at fault for the winner on New Year's Day, I think it'd be time for Lawton to come back into the side next game. I think we've missed the interplay you get between Lawton and Goodmanson down the right-hand side. I don't think Bosley's quite as...
No, he doesn't, right.
I'm trying to think what the right word, dynamic, coming forward. He can cross. There's certainly, nothing you'd say he's not an awful crosser. They're pretty steady getting into the middle of the box. And I know something that people criticised Lawton for previously is the inconsistency of crossing. Yeah. But I think Lawton's just a little bit more mobile. He's going to get down the line a little bit better and, maybe get more advanced and get into a better position to put those crosses in to start with. And for me, I'd be bringing him back in. I think there's going to be a little bit of rotation anyway come Saturday because obviously it's a cup game. So yeah, there's going to be a few changes. So I think if Orton comes back in for the cup game and does well. I think that'll
prompt him to keep his place.
Yeah, hopefully mean that he keeps his place for the next game.
I completely agree with you, James. I think it does take something quite... it takes either an injury or an absolute catastrophic error, doesn't it, for Dyche to change his side and to misplace his loyalty in his squad. I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that I thought it was a complete catastrophic error for the second goal, but yeah, Bosley should have done much better for that second goal. So I really do hope we see Matt Lawton on Saturday at City and see where that takes it. So moving away from the right back position, let's get back into the centre halves. And it came as no surprise to anybody to see James Tarkowski back in the side with his very jazzy matching arm bandage for his broken hand, which I did see, which I thought was splendidly coordinated by the marketing team, I have to say. It matched his shorts perfectly. But I digress from the matter in hand. It was no surprise to see him, was it, James? And actually, I thought he played very well. I thought he brought that class back into the side that we've been used to seeing. So I guess where I'm looking at this now with Tarkowski is, where do we now put Kevin Long, given that he's had a 3-game run in the side, two of which he played quite well and did put in quite competent performances, and one where he had, unfortunately, a bit of a shocker. Do we place him in the, well, yes, he's good enough to be a replacement for either Tarka or Ben Mee, or are we at the position where he's just not grown enough to be a good enough second in command to this side, given just how well this Burnley side's performing?
I think it's really tough to say, to be honest. Obviously, at the tail end of last season, we saw bits of Tarky and Long together, and I think they looked mainly solid, but I wouldn't have said there was anything there in Tarky's performances made you think he was going to come out and play the way he has done this season. So I think it's a bit tough to judge sometimes on just one or two games. I think Long's had decent games and he's also had some less decent games. I wouldn't say he was awful against Spurs. I think the team as a whole were below the average performance they've set so far this season. So he wasn't necessarily to blame for any of the goals. But at the same time, he didn't do anything, obviously, that could have swung the game in our favour. But then I thought he was, very steady at Manchester United. I thought he had a really good game. So it's one of those ones, it's just really difficult to really judge. I think you'd have to see a more extended run in the side to really get a proper feel for it. But obviously that's not going to happen as long as Tarkowski's able to play. And I thought Tarkowski came in, did the job you expected of him, looked really good alongside Ben Mee. And I think the two of them together are just such a good pair. To be honest, I think it'll be a travesty if they don't both get picked for England's World Cup squad. Personally, if I was England manager, I'd be playing them both together.
I would too, I agree.
And that's not just, Burnley fan bias. I think they've both played really good. If you look at the defence as a unit, what we've done over the course of the season, I think it could really help England out. And they deal with one of those problems that people always say about World Cup squads, is that they don't get together for long enough. There's not that familiarity between players. So I think if you can come in with a ready-made centre-half partnership, it takes a lot of that needing to get to know each other time out of it. So I think it's difficult. I'd rather not talk about having like a replacement for Tarkowski lined up, because hopefully we won't be losing him or me anytime soon. And we won't need to see Long as first choice. But I think if it came to it, the way Dash has got the system working, I think Long would be adequate to step into the side. Obviously, the concern is beyond that. That there's nothing else in the pipeline at centre-half. Whereas Long's been learning the system, and it's the way Dash as the players play that, it doesn't really matter who the individual personnel are. We play to a system, and anyone who comes in can do the job required. And I think for the most part, Long's done that. There's been the odd performance that's maybe not been quite as good, but it's to be expected when he's got so little experience really in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
So little football in him.
It would take
a while for him to warm up.
You're right. It is really, really tough to consider. I mean, for me, I think I agree with pretty much most of what you said there, James. I think Long is playing the system very well, and he's shown that he's ready, and he has got that graft about him. He just lacks that class that I think we've maybe been spoilt with having a few seasons with Michael Keane and Ben Mee, and now with Tarkowski next to Ben Mee as well. When you take Tarkowski out of the system and you put, you get what you get with Ben Mee. I'm a massive Ben Mee fan. But then you put Long and Mee together, you're just missing that extra bit of class that we've been used to seeing in the back five. And I think that's the bit that worries me, and it's just being able to step up for that moment of brilliance or that bit of skill that just gets us out of trouble, and we've been used to seeing that. So I'm not convinced, and I don't want to jump down on the lad, because he's obviously been incredibly hardworking to deputise as much as he has, but I feel like the team has naturally progressed better than Kevin Long now, and we are demanding a better class of excellence from our players, and this may very well be down to personal skill, or it may very well be down to his unfortunate position where he's not had the game time to develop this. But I just feel like he's lacking behind, and he's a bit too far behind the curve now, and that the team's just progressed a little bit better than he is. Again, sticking with the defence then, James, we've got a couple more obviously positions just to briefly touch on. One of the real stories to come out from the fan perspective at the Boxing Day trip to United was Tom Heaton, who decided not to sit in the players' lounge and not to sit on the bench, but basically got his civvies on and came and sat in the middle of the stand, in the middle of all the Burnley fans. Can't have watched much of the game because he spent the entire time signing endless programmes, endless shirts, selfies with fans, chatting to the fans, and essentially just being the all-round incredibly great guy that he is. That said, he has a problem. He has a great big problem in that Nick Pope is playing exceptionally well. James, I'm going to put you on the spot. What does Dyche do when Heaton becomes fit? Does he drop Pope or does Heaton walk straight back in?
You can't drop Pope, to be honest. You know, the way he's been playing, the number of clean sheets he's had, it's just not possible. It's difficult because obviously you're talking about the club captain and a player who's, you know, until he got injured, was he getting in the England squad, and, you know, people were calling for him to be, you know, England's number one going towards the World Cup. It's incredibly difficult, and I don't envy Dash at all for being in the position. And you know, I think in the short term, Heaton would definitely accept that, you know, you can't drop Pope, the form he's in. But obviously, long term, Heaton's a number one. He's going to expect first team football. It's going to be very difficult to keep both players happy, considering that, you know, the respective times they've had in their recent runs in the squad. So it's going to be difficult to deal with long term. It's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, it really is. I would go as far as to say that I think this is going to be the trickiest decision that Dyche is going to face at his time in Burnley when Heaton gets fit. So one final point then on the defence, and let's not dwell too much on this because hopefully it's just a one-off. James, you've already touched on it. The defending for the second goal was hugely disappointing, both in terms of how we normally defend and also how much we usually, and how much of a habit we've got into maintaining our disciplined right to the final whistle. Are we just chalking this off as a one-off, or are we starting to see that maybe our second choice defence isn't quite as robust as our first choice?
I don't know. I think, you know, the two centre halves are playing the first choice again now. Barnes is in the side as first choice effectively at the moment. You know, long term, obviously, I think Lawton's seen as our first choice right back, but Bardsley's played himself into the side. He's, you know, he's not there because Lawton's not available anymore. He's there because he's earned his place on merit. And I think Taylor's, you know, playing pretty good football. I'm pretty impressed with what I've seen from him. I think defensively, Ward's still the better option, and probably will come back in as soon as he's available.
Can I just but long get term, to expand on that, James, actually, just very quickly? For me, do you think that Charlie Taylor offers enough going forward? Considering he came to us with a reputation as being a very attacking fullback, especially against Liverpool, he was very, very defensive. The only time he got forward pretty much resulted in our goal. I'm not entirely sure that he's as comfortable going forward as Ward is.
I think what it's a case of is, you know, he's obviously just stepped up to the Premier League. He's trying to make sure he does his primary job first, which is defending. You know, and when he's confident that he can defend in the Premier League, then obviously he's going to be able to push on from that and do more work on the attacking side of his game. So I think he is good enough going forward. We've just maybe not seen as much as we will do long term to start with, because he's conscious that you know, primarily he's a defender and he's got to defend, and that's what he's focusing on in his game.
Yeah, you're probably right, actually. It's one of those where I guess we start getting impatient as fans, don't we? And we want to see them coming on and creating everything as soon as they get into the side. The other talking points then, I guess, from the Liverpool game was a reaction, I guess, to Sean Dyche's substitutes. Do you think they were too little, too late? Well, do you think they were A, the right substitutes, and B, do you think he could have made them earlier? Essentially, Dyche went back into his default position of waiting until the goal had gone against us before he made the changes. I'm not entirely sure I think that's a problem, to be honest. I've seen a lot of fans on social media quite critical of Dyche for leaving his substitutions way too late and not being proactive. But I think it's such a difficult balance for Dyche, isn't it? Because a home point against a side like Liverpool's is a really good point, and he doesn't want to do something. And sorry, up to the point that they scored their goal, we were absolutely matching them on the park and we were limiting their choices to hardly anything. But then on the flip side of that, should we maybe have seen an opportunity here to go ahead and try and go for all 3 points when it was becoming clearer and clearer that Liverpool were also playing for a point? I'm not entirely sure Dyche can maybe be criticised. I think he's got to make one decision either way. And I'm not really sure there's a right or wrong decision there, is there, James?
I'm not sure. Obviously, it's been a long-term thing with Dyche that I think people have thought that generally is subs tend to come too late in the game. But on this occasion, I'm trying to remember, you know, what time in the game he did it.
It was late on. So Sam Vokes came on at about 70th, 71st minute, and Naki Wells didn't come on until the 83rd minute. So they would do a two really late substitutions.
Wells is maybe late, but I'd say Vokes, that's actually...
it's pretty standard.
Pretty standard for Dyche. You know, around 70 minutes, he doesn't really like to make changes before that. And a lot of managers don't, to be honest. I'd say, you know, 60 minutes is probably considered an early sub, maybe. I'd say that's reasonably early, you know, earlier than the average first sub. So 70 is probably about normally the average, maybe, you know, 20 minutes to come on, change the game. I'm surprised, you know, that he brought on Wells so late, because maybe it's hard to really have a big impact with just 10 minutes to go when you're looking for someone to come on and use the pace. But it's difficult because obviously you're judging it off what's a normal Dyche sub, and I think Dyche tends to be 75, 80, 85 minute mark for his subs. He doesn't really like to change the team too much, and it is something I think he's gradually started to do a little bit more, is he's make it slightly earlier substitutions. Maybe Volk should have come on a bit earlier. I think Hendrick wasn't really offering a lot, to be honest. And I was glad to see it was Hendrick that came off. So from that point of view, I think he did make the correct substitutions. Because previously we've seen him take DeFore off and drop Hendrick back and bring another striker on, which for me, I think DeFore's a player that you've got to keep on the pitch as long as he's fit enough to play the game. So I definitely took it as a positive to see that DeFore stayed on and it was Hendrick that made way. But apart from that, I think it's pretty much par for the course from Dyche to see, you know, subs at that sort of stage of the game.
Okay, well, let's stick with Hendrick then, since you raised it, James, because I've got a real dilemma with Jeff Hendrick at the moment, and he is a player that's coming under a lot of stick at the moment from fans and from media alike for being pretty much a passenger in games. Now, for me, I actually thought that he had one of the strongest first half performances that we've seen in a while from him. I thought he was much improved. Second half, he did completely vanish again, so it came as no surprise that he came off, and it was the right substitution, James. I agree with you. But is this Hendrick's fault? I mean, I'm told that Jeff Hendrick does have the ability and the skill set to play that number 10 role, but I don't think he does, because he's not doing it. And it's not just a dip in form. It's been week after week that he's just been in no man's land linking the midfield to a lone striker. And it's just, I really feel for the guy. I feel like there's nothing he can do, but what do you do? How do we resolve the Jeff Hendrick problem?
For me, I think he either needs a spell out of the side, or you maybe give him a game. I think with the FA Cup coming up, this is maybe the perfect opportunity to try this. I'd be interested to see DeFore playing where Hendrick's been playing, and Hendrick playing where DeFore's been playing. I know DeFore and Coke together has been fantastic, but for me, Coke's a good enough player that really... it doesn't necessarily matter who's next to him. He's still going to play a similar sort of game. And actually, I thought he had maybe a little bit of an off game for him against Liverpool. So he'll be looking to bounce back. But I think Defoe is the, you know, if you look at the players we've got, he's the player who really screams to me number 10. You know, given an opportunity to hit the ball a little bit more, you know, work a little bit of that magic he's got, but also still in a position to pass the ball around and influence play in that way. But I can see that Dash should probably be pretty hesitant to do that the way he's played next to Cork. And I think he likes what he's been offering. Everyone likes what he's been offering. I think you could get more out of him playing him a little bit further forward, but it's not really the Dash way to fix something that's not broken in terms of Defoe's game. So for me, I'd probably want to see Dash take Kendrick out of the side for a game or two and try Arfield again in the middle. And play Wells out wide.
Yeah, I quite liked Arfield in that middle role. I think it was he was doing really well, wasn't he, in the early part of the season when he was having to cover there. One final point then on the Liverpool game. Despite obviously the gut wrenching goal to concede in the dying minutes, the goal from Gudmundsson was superb, wasn't it? I mean, how much we're huge fans at None and Ever, but how great is that lad playing this season?
He's been really good, and I think you know, really key. Key aspect to it has been that he was injured so often last season, and he's managed to stay fit this year. And I don't know how much that's to do with, you know, maybe extra work he's done in pre-season or, you know, anything like that. But I think he's, you know, he's obviously kept himself fit. He's grown into the team. I think the start of the season was maybe a little bit of a slow start from him, but the last 2 months, perhaps, I think you've seen someone who's really confident on the ball. You know, he's looking to beat his man. And in the Premier League, it's not always easy to beat the fullbacks. There's quite a few good fullbacks, but he's tried to take anyone he's played against on. His crossing's been really good. He's looked dangerous when he shoots. And then I think the goal against Liverpool, he's shown something there that we've maybe not seen from him before. If you were to say someone's going to head a goal for us, you probably wouldn't be putting Gudmundsson too far up your list of predictions of who it would be. It was great to see him having the awareness to, you know, to be running and following the ball in, because quite often you'd maybe see that go and you'd see the ball go wide with Burnley player nowhere near it. Obviously, I think Vaux probably is going for goal rather than looking to flick it on. But the fact that Gudmundsson's chasing in, he's probably maybe more looking for the rebound off the keeper than anything. But he's there, he's aware, he's unmarked, and he gets his head on it and you know, gets it on the target. And from that distance, all you need to do is get it on the target. So it's a great run. And I think that's, you know, like I said, an aspect of the game we've maybe not seen from him previously. But to add a goal like that, not a scrappy one, but one that you maybe wouldn't expect from him. It's not a clean strike or, you know, one where he's found the bottom corner, just having got one-on-one with the keeper. It's good to see. And it's those sort of goals that are key for teams like us, where we maybe don't score too many. You know, ones where players have shown a willingness to follow something up that might be worth nothing. I mean, you know, 9 times out of 10, he probably makes that run and Vaux heads it on target and the keeper saves, or, you know, Vaux maybe scores or Vaux heads over and, you know, Gudmundsson's made that run for nothing. But that one time it turns out that the ball falls in that direction. It's great to see someone there to take advantage of it.
Yeah, definitely. And if there was one player on that pitch on New Year's Day, it was going to be Gudmundsson. I thought he was terrific. I think Defoe got the man of the match, and I think it was a very close one, but it could easily have been Gudmundsson. I just love this lad this season. I think he's giving absolutely everything to the cause, and what a fantastic steal he's been. So we're going to finish this week's podcast with a end of year review, which is basically what we all tend to do at the end of a new year, don't we? We analyse what happened in the last year and what our hopes are for the coming year. So we certainly looked at the second half of 2017, and we asked you guys on social media this week the following questions. We wanted to know how we performed over the festive fixtures, where you think we need to strengthen in January. and where you think we'll finish this season. And just a couple of the reactions that we got from our followers. Chris Horner said that we got what we expected over the Christmas. We do need a wide player, a centre-back and a proper number 10. He thinks we're going to finish 9th or 10th. My goodness, that's amazing, isn't it? Mikey Watson said we played average, which is harsh, Mikey, but okay. He thinks that we need to spend out wide, a centre-half and a number 10. Again, consistent. And he also thinks we're going to finish 9th. Adam Priestley thinks that we finished, that we played okay. We need up front and attacking midfield to buy, and we're going to finish between 7th and 10th. I'm not going to read all of these out, guys, because there is quite a lot. Friend of the show, Mark Landers, he said that he thought we performed to par, 3 of the best 4 clubs plus Huddersfield, so not easy fixtures. We need to strengthen on the wing and the attacking midfield. Hendrick just not performing, so I think we know where Mike sits there. And he thinks we're also going to finish 9th. He can see Leicester and Everton overtaking us, but that's still about 5 or 7 places better than we expected. So James, I'm going to put those 3 questions to us too now, just to summarise where we thought we were at the end of 2017. So first up, how well we performed over the festive fixtures. To me, I think we're only a point lower than what we could realistically expect. To have to face Spurs, United and Liverpool, whilst we are looking at being competitive in those games now, the chances are you probably won't win those games. That said, away at Huddersfield, I thought was a perfect opportunity for us to go, especially considering our away form, and get 3 points. So if I was being realistic for the festive period, I was looking at us getting 3 points out of a possible 12. We did get 2, so only a point behind. Summarise for us, James, how well did you think we performed over the festive fixtures, and did we get more, less or on par points that you expected?
We got less than obviously I predicted on the podcast. But what I'd say is if you actually look at the way we played in 2 of those games, in fact 3 of those games, we got less than we deserved out of it. I think obviously at Man United, we were very unlucky to not win. And you know, you look at the potential third goal from Vokes that I don't think was offside. The fact that before they won that free kick, I think Vokes was fouled and it should have been a free kick to us rather than them. And then obviously Huddersfield not getting the penalty. I think there you could easily see that maybe you could make a case that we deserved all 3 points at Old Trafford. You can make the case that we should have got 3 points at the John Smith Stadium, and we should have got a point against Liverpool. So I think in that respect, maybe we got less than we deserved based on our performance. But obviously, at the end of the day, goals win games, and sometimes these bits of bad luck with refereeing decisions, you know, don't go your way, and I think you just have to accept that. So for me, I thought we performed, with the exception of the Spurs game, I thought we were pretty decent across all the games at Christmas. And we can maybe feel a little bit aggrieved by what we came out with. But on the other side, if you'd said beginning of the season we'd get those points over the Christmas period, I think we'd be pretty happy considering there's, 3 big teams in there. There's only really Huddersfield that you would have said that's a game we'd like to definitely see us win. I'd say pretty... Performance-wise, above par. Results-wise, I'd say par, because you probably would have expected us to get the 3 points from Huddersfield and nothing from the other 3. So to get 3 draws, it's the same as getting the win against Huddersfield.
Fine. So turning to where we think we need to strengthen in January, I think we need a minimum of 3 players. I think we need... centre-half cover, and the reasons I've set out in this podcast. I think we need a replacement for Robbie Brady, and I think we should be buying a winger. I don't think we should be looking in the loan market. And I think that we do need something more different up front. I think we need a plan B, just because I think our first choice strategy works really, really well. But as I've said earlier in this podcast, I'm not entirely convinced with Burnley's ability to turn a game when we've gone behind, or whether we need to create a bit of magic. And I don't think that our current forward line offer a good enough difference. I think if it's a like-for-like substitution when they put them in. So that's what I need. James, where do you buy?
I think most people are probably saying the same stuff. You know, we need a centre back. We need a centre back before the season started. And I don't think it's through lack of trying that we didn't end up with one. They just, what we needed wasn't out there or wasn't available. Yeah, we need to bring someone in to play on the wing. If there's someone out there to buy, then yeah, by all means buy. If not, see what's available on loan. I think it's going to be difficult to get someone in on loan who really brings what you want. The only option potentially, and I know this is popular with some people, I'm personally not a big one for bringing former players back. I'd say Jack Cote was the exception on that front. But you know, some people would say maybe bring Danny Ings in on loan. He could probably play out wide for you.
I've seen that
offer
lot,
something
actually.
A bit different.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun
offer along the same lines of what I've been saying you could get from Naki Wells, really. You know, just a bit of pace down the wing, cut inside and maybe score some goals. And then I'd like to see us try and bring in a real number 10 and then drop Hendrick to the bench as backup for Coke and Defoe and have someone playing off the striker there who can really offer what we want, a bit of creativity, a goal threat. Someone who can have a major impact on games. I don't really like putting, you know, names to potential needs, and I'm not really sure who'd be the best fit there. But if Dash could, you know, pull off the sort of moves he has pulled off previously and bring someone in who is maybe a little bit of a diamond in the rough, it could potentially as well as being beneficial this season. I think, you know, we've seen with Defoe, it's maybe the second season that's key for players that Dash brings in and doesn't have a full pre-season with. So, be interesting. But for me, those are the three positions I'd be looking at, centre-half, on the wing, and the number 10, as we're calling it these days, which is probably someone who could also cover central midfield as well, but primarily be looking for more that attacking central midfielder rather than someone in the same mould as say Cork.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. Okay, well, final question that we posed to our listeners and our fans on social media was where you thought Burnley were going to finish this season. And just incredulously, everybody had us in the top 10. And this is just it's just an amazing time to be following Burnley at the moment, to consider that we are actually legitimately talking about Burnley Football Club finishing in the top 10 of the Premier League is just absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we analyse these games week in, week out, and sometimes we really get in there in the nitty-gritty and sometimes can maybe come across as too overcritical. But that's because we do have a show to produce and we do have, you know, discussion points for the full hour. But I don't think any of us here at None and Ever or any of us at Turf Moor can really just speak any higher of what Dyche has done this season, and the fact that we're talking as much as we are about a top 10 finish is fantastic. My prediction, I think Everton are going to finish seventh. I think they were always going to finish seventh. I know there was a lot said about their start to the season, but I still think they're going to be a top seven side. And for me, I feel like Leicester are looking very, very strong. So I feel like they will just pip eighth. So my prediction is I think Burnley will finish best of the rest. And I think we'll finish ninth, which is just fantastic. James, give us your prediction.
I think you're very confident for Everton there. I think Everton fans will like you. Not heard about a listener who you're trying to impress with Everton talk, are you?
No, not at all. It's my genuine view, I feel like this is going to be a legacy for Allardyce. I don't know why I've felt it since he appointed him, but let's see.
I don't know. I think they've still been a little bit inconsistent. I think it all depends on what we manage to do in January and how injuries and suspensions play out. I think there's no reason we can't finish seventh. You know, where we are now, we've still got quite a comfortable cushion over Everton. If we can start picking up a few wins again and stringing a few together, then, you know, there's every reason to believe we could finish where we are right now. I think a lot depends where we can start scoring more goals. You know, goals really is what's holding us back at the moment. You know, out of the top 10, Everton are the closest side for having scored as few as we have. We scored 19, they've scored 25. And that's a team that people are talking about not getting enough goals. Sam Allardyce has come out and said how, you know, he's definitely looking for a striker in January because he's not getting enough goals from the guys he's got. But saying that, you know, I think seventh is a possibility if we can start stringing some wins together again. But for me, I'd say we're looking in that ninth to 11th sort of area, probably. And I'd even say maybe at this stage, if we finished 11th, that'd be a bit disappointing.
Oh, I agree.
11th's 10 points back on us now. So
yeah, I agree. I feel like we definitely need to be in the top 10. I completely agree, James.
So yeah. No, I think, you know, every possibility. We've still got quite a comfortable cushion back tonight. So
yeah,
you know, as long as we can
just keep
get some wins on the board and yeah, keep ticking along. I think we've got every chance of finishing the top seven.
We've had some tough fixtures recently, and you're not going to win all your games. So, you know, I think that's they're really positive predictions. And I can't believe that we're talking about this. Yeah. Just before we wrap,
just worth mentioning, this is actually completely now out of sequence. But
okay,
just heard that the referee from the Huddersfield game has been promoted to the FIFA list.
What are you kidding?
Interesting on the back of that. No, I'm not.
Wow.
So
there you go.
Interesting. But we'll get back on track now.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you brought that in, James, because I'm sure all the listeners now will react to that breaking news with not a massive amount of pleasure. I don't think. I think there's going to be some shock there. So listeners, do make sure you tweet us reaction to James's groundbreaking news on the None and Ever podcast. Just before we do wrap things up, I'd quite like to have a quick shout out, please, to Michael W, whose Twitter handle is GolferMike2. He tweeted us today to ask for some advice about where to sit. He has just moved to the UK from the States and has absolutely loved the positivity and atmosphere around the team, so wants to come to Turf Moor for the first time. So, Michael, welcome to Turf Moor, and I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you become a lifelong claret. That's everything else that we've got time for this week. What can we say about 2017? We ended the year in just sublime form, and we've had one of the best years as most Clarets fans have had in a very, very long time. And for most of a new generation of Clarets fans, the only thing that they've ever seen is an absolutely brilliant, positive, well-performing, outstanding Burnley side. So listeners, it's been fantastic to have you for the last year, and thank you again for supporting us, and thank you for tuning in and listening every single week. We couldn't produce this podcast without you, and your support is always very, very, very gratefully received. We do hope you'll stick around for 2018. Tell your friends about us, share us on social media, give us a review on iTunes, that always helps, and just basically get on board, and obviously always tweet us and let us know what your opinions are, and if there's any discussion points, we'd love to hear them. Thanks again, go to Adam, who's going to be producing this week's podcast and editing all of our little bleeps out of there, and James, thank you as ever for joining me. That is all we have time for. This has been the None and Ever podcast. I've been Natalie Bromley. Until next time.
First podcast of 2017. Two games to go over and a new signing. But Joey Barton's move that was on the cards, that had already been trailed. The club had said that they were going to do it.
Again, he won't want to stop up on goal difference. He won't want to just come stop up by a point. He'll want to finish up as tight as possible, and he'll really drive the players on, I think.